Shalom Aleichem. My name is Rabbi Adam Dubin. This week our learning is once again for the Refuah Shleima of Zev Ben Leah, as Dr. Zev Zelenko. May he and all the other Holy Yisrael receive the Refuah that they need. So I wish that everyone had a meaningful and inspiring Yontif. I know that I did. Unfortunately, I was learning many things, including with my son. They had a learning program for his yeshiva, and so I kind of had to cram in what I was going to be speaking about this evening because he had his own limud that I was helping him with. So anyway, this week's parsha, as we know, is Parshas Naso, and it is the second parsha in Sefer Bamidbar. It is famous for a few things. One of the main points in the parsha that is perhaps most famous for are the soita woman for the nazir and for the nesiim, that is the different princes of Nasi Yisrael, and the karbonos that they brought for the inauguration. Hanukkah's Mishkan. So I wanted to focus on the Soita woman. Now, of course, just a little background, if you don't know much about her, you don't remember. The Soita woman was a woman who was warned by her husband that she should not seclude herself Nistara with a specific man who was, of course, not her husband. And she did so anyway. She did so in front of witnesses, or at least we should say suspicion. He has a strong reason to believe this to be the case, because there were Adam who said that his wife had to quit herself with this other gentleman. This has many problems that are involved with it, because, for one thing, as we may know, that a woman who is secluded with herself with another man that's not her husband, it's considered to be as though most likely she engaged in something that was that only goes between a man and his wife. So it breaks up the marriage. And so this particular gentleman, the husband, apparently seems to be perhaps paranoid. Maybe he has a reason for being paranoid. He believes that his wife has done something that is not necessarily adultery, but it might be. It borderlines on it because, after all, he told his wife, Dafka, specifically, do not seclude yourself with this particular man. However, she does so anyway, or again, he assumes that she has, based off of the kinna, jealousy, that, as the pasuk says. And so then there's a whole long procedure that the husband, of course, he and his wife are now forbidden to each other once he has accused her of adultery, or at least, again, of secluding herself with this other person. And he brings her to the Beis HaMikdash, and there's a whole procedure where the Kohen takes down her hair, which, of course, is one of the ways that we know that women are supposed to cover their hair, because it's an erva to not cover her hair once she's married. And so to uncover her hair shows a great deal of embarrassment. So the Kohen uncovers her hair and uncovers other parts of her, really embarrasses her. And to try to convince her, confess that you did this thing that your husband warned you not to do, and warned you in front of witnesses not to do. If, by the way, at any time she admits, no, I did it, I admit it, so okay, they have to get divorced, but that's the end of it, so to speak. But if she continues to deny that she did anything wrong, then it continues up until the point where the Kohen takes one of the names of Hashem and erases it into what's referred to as in English as the bitter waters, because bitter for a few reasons. One, because, of course, erasing the name of Hashem is not something that we take lightly. We don't do it. It's usher to do. But he takes the name of Hashem, puts it in, and erases the name of Hashem into the water, and she drinks the water. And if it turns out that she's been lying this whole time, and in fact she has secluded herself with the man that her husband warned her not to, then her belly explodes, and she dies. So it's bitter for a variety of reasons. One, because, of course, it gets to the point where this husband feels like he's so jealous, he needs to bring his wife to the Beis HaMikdash for this procedure. And two, because, of course, unfortunately, if she ends up to have violated her husband's commands in this case, then she dies. Can't get much more bitter than that. It's because based off of this water. Now, what we're going to take up here, it's in it happens to be, it's in the fourth Aliyah. It is the fifth Perek, the 28th Pasuk. It's Perek Hey Pasuk Chav Ches. It says, V'im lo nitma'a ha'isha u'tahirahi v'niksa nizra'a zara. That if the woman had not become defiled, she hadn't become tamei, and she therefore is tahor, she will be exempted, and she will have offspring. She will bear children. Of course, this is, again, she drinks the water. It turns out that she didn't commit the avera, so then she is okay. In fact, she and her husband are rewarded with having children. Rashi says on the pasuk, just to paraphrase Rashi, to summarize, says, but if the woman hadn't been defiled on the occasion of the secluding herself with this man, the tahara he, and she is considered clean regarding any other place, she's tahara, v'niksa, and she'll be exempted, that is, from the effect of the water that wastes the body, not only this, but also Mizra'al Zara, that she will bear seed. She'll have children. Rashi says that is, if she used to bear children, that she would have children, but it would be very painful. From now on, these children that she would have would be free of pain. If up until now, her children had been, classic understanding is the word is shorin, so darker skin, but a ruddy complexion, a darker complexion, or perhaps just that they were dull-faced. From now on, they would be levanim, which literally means whiter, but light skin or brighter faces. The Rashbam, who was one of the grandsons of Rashi, says there that she'll be blessed with children. A simple understanding, she'll have children. The Gemara in the Masechta Sota, which is on Daf, Chaf Vav Amid Aleph, says that she'll be proven innocent and then she will have children, means that if she was barren, she didn't have any children, she'd become pregnant. And this is what Rabbi Akiva says. Now Rabbi Shmuel says to him, if so, then all of the barren women would in the world would then be nistara, would seclude themselves with other men, but not commit adultery. And then they become pregnant from drinking the mesot, the bitter waters. And any woman who did not seclude herself with another man would be the loser. Rather, the pasuk teaches us that if she used to have painful births, then she'll have easy births. If she used to give birth to girls, then she'll give birth to boys. If she used to give birth to short children, then they'll end up to have taller children. If she used to give birth to, again, those shchurim, the ruddier or duller-faced children, then she'll give birth to the brighter-faced ones. That is the Gemara. Sefer HaZikaron rejects Rashi rejected Rabbi Akiva's interpretation because of Rabbi Yishmael's question. That is, again, Rabbi Akiva says that she'll be proven innocent, that she'll have children. It seems to be the simple pshat. But of course, Rashi, who was always trying to give the simple pshat, gives basically based off of Rabbi Shmuel's answer. Taisus on the Daf says that it appears that one could turn Rabbi Shmuel's question back into his own solution. Surely all those who had painful births would then be nistara, would seclude themselves with other men, but would not commit adultery, and then have easy births after drinking the Nesaita. So Rashi's perish on the pasuk prompts a couple of questions. First, why did Rashi reject the simple pshat of the Rashbam, and again of Rabbi Akiva, that the innocent Saita is rewarded from her ideal by being blessed with having children? The Sefer HaZikaron mentioned argues that Rashi considered this explanation to be unacceptable at the simple pshat because of Rabbi Yishmael's question in the Gemara that we mentioned, that if so, then all of the barren women would end up to be nistara themselves, would seclude themselves with other men, but then not commit adultery. And then become pregnant after drinking the Mesaita. And of course, anyone who didn't do this, such a woman would be a loser. However, again, a simple pshat, this is difficult to accept that this was Rashi's objection. In addition to being nistara secluded with, the woman must also have been warned by her husband that in order to be eligible to drink the Mesaita, since the decision whether or not to issue this warning was totally up to her husband, drinking the Mesaita is clearly not an option for many women who, again, had not received the warning b'fnei Eidim. In any case, it would it really be so terrible if a morally decent woman wanted to drink the Mesaita so that she could be blessed with her children? The Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, relates that this is indeed what the intention of Chana was. Chana, of course, remember, is a very righteous woman, a tzaddikus. Rabbi Yishmael's question is just as much refutation of his own solution as it is Rabbi Akiva's, as Tosfos explained. Rabbi Yishmael refuted Rabbi Akiva the pshat that if she was barren, then she would become pregnant. Our question, however, is why Rashi rejects the simple pshat of the Rashbam that our pasuk is not speaking about a blessing to women who have not been able to have children, but the priceless bracha of an extra child for all women. A further problem with Rashi is why he only cites two examples of Rabbi Yishmael and omits two others. If she used to give birth to girls, and now she'll give birth to boys. And if she used to give birth to short children, now she'll give birth to tall ones. Presumably, Rashi thought these two interpretations were unacceptable at the pshat, but why? So, an explanation. So, Rashi was troubled by the following question. When the Kohen warns the Saita about the effects of the Mesaita, he makes a detailed statement of all the possible results, both positive and negative. If the man has not slept with you, then you will be absolved of these bitter waters. But if you indeed did go astray, then you will choke. As it says again earlier in our parsha, that's pasuk yud test and chaf. So why then, on reaching our pasuk that we're speaking about again, pasuk chaf ches, do we discover a new detail that was omitted by the Kohen, that the Saita is given a totally unexpected reward, that she will bear children? Due to this problem, Rashi rejected the simple pshat of the pasuk that was argued by the Rashbam, that she will have children, literally, because it's difficult to accept that the Kohen would omit this lengthy, from his lengthy discourse, any mention of his reward for the innocent Saita. Rather, Rashi concluded that this is not an unprecedented reward for the innocent Saita, but a direct consequence of drinking the Mesaita. And therefore, while the Kohen did not mention this detail in particular, since it wasn't immediately relevant at that time, he did mention that the general concept that the waters have an effect on the woman's body. So it turns out that what we're reading here is not a new concept, that the Saita is given a splendid reward, but the clarification of an existing concept, that is that the Mesaita would have an effect on her body. This being the case, Rashi reasoned that the positive effect of the Mesaita on the innocent Saita must somehow mirror and reflect the negative effects of the guilty Saita. So Rashi wrote in our pasuk that she will bear children. It means that if she used to have painful births, now she'll have easy births. And this parallels the painful death that the Mesaita would bring upon a guilty Saita woman. Likewise, Rashi wrote that if she used to give birth to dull-faced or darker-faced children, then now she'll give birth to lighter-faced ones. Because this is comparable to the effect of the mesota on a guilty woman, that her belly will swell and eventually her thigh will rupture, which will obviously bring her upon a very dull and distressed face. However, Rabbi Yishmael's other two examples, that if she used to give birth to girls and not boys, and if she used to give birth to short children, not just tall ones, Rashi rejects them, as they don't mirror the negative effects of the mesota, and therefore would not represent a direct consequence of drinking them. Now, should we mention, of course, that this sota ordeal no longer can happen, and not just because of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but Chazal already ruled many, many years ago that the sota ordeal was not something that that could happen in their time, so all the more so in our time. But there's a lesson, of course, that we can all take from this, which is, of course, on the one hand, that we should strive to not be jealous and cause such distress on others, on our family, but as well that by following the Torah mitzvahs, and that we shouldn't have even the opportunity, the ability to look like we might be guilty of something, chas v'shalom. We should always strive to do our best to be exemplary, to be the or l'goyim that we are supposed to be. And that means, of course, doing the best that we can in all of our endeavors. And it means in helping to do mitzvahs ourselves and helping other people do mitzvahs. But also just acting in appropriate ways, acting in a way that is above reproach. Brit Hashem, I give everyone a bracha that we should all act truly in a manner that is above reproach. And by doing so, as well as all the other mitzvahs of Hashem, we should merit to speedily return to Eretz Yisrael, which should, Mirat Hashem, no longer be in the tumult that it's in right now. But certainly we should all return to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, becoming Beis HaMikdash, with the rebuilding this Beis HaMikdash, with the coming of Mashiach, the kingdom of Yamenu. I wish everyone a good Shabbos. Thank you, Benjamin.